Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hi, I'm Troy.
And I'm Reese, and you're listening to The Unusual Suspects, Pop Culture and Whiskey, the podcast in which we talk about movies, games, comics, and, you know, all other geeky stuff. We're going to try, like I said, we're going to really try for a relatively short show. We're going to try for about 45 minutes. Hopefully won't go too far over. The things I've noticed is that our shows go from about 120 to about an hour, I think hour 40 last week, and we averaged about 25 25 listens, which I have to assume it means 25 full listens from beginning to end. So for the 25 people out there that actually managed to listen to the entire thing, I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. When we did look at the stats, though, we were getting a lot of people listening, but not fully. So we're trying a shorter, more precise, more focused show. So hopefully there are a lot of people out there that do listen, do like what we're doing, but don't just have the time or the patience to listen to us for an hour and a half. So we're going to talk a little bit about The Man with the Iron Fist, which came out in Australia this week. Troy's going to talk a bit about the Wii U. We're going to do a little bit of a spoiler cast at the end of the show about everything Walking Dead. I'll let you know, so if you haven't seen anything of The Walking Dead, we will tell you to pause it and come back to it later. Please come back to it later. And we will talk a bit about some of the best trailers of the year probably coming out this week. First up, just a quick shout out to Nerd Say What, which is a really cool Facebook page. I'll post the link. You guys should have it over there. He does a bunch of competitions. I don't know if his competition's still on or not, but he was trying to give away a signed copy of Spawn from Todd McFarlane, which was really
hell
cool.
Yeah.
So, and he's posting a whole bunch of cool shit. So without further ado, let's talk about some trailers. First up, we're going to talk about After Earth. Now, After Earth is written by Gary Whitta, who wrote Book of Eli. He also wrote the fourth episode of The Walking Dead game. He also used to write for PC Mag, so he's a gamer at heart. After Earth is about After Earth, what looked like centuries after the Earth, humans have moved away. Will Smith and his son crash land, and they have to survive.
It's, yeah, I don't know, like futuristic Tarzan, I guess? It's kind of, yeah, overrun with animals and really interesting shit, but, I mean, trailer looks really friggin' cool.
It's a teaser more of anything, like a kind of, this is the idea we're going for. There's been a lot of rumors, a lot of pitches out about what it is about.
But yeah, it's kind of a really hard trailer to describe, but check it out, we'll post it up on the page.
I'm just a little bit worried about the fact that the director is M. Night Shyamalan, who did such great work with
What a Twist,
Avatar. So next up is The Lone Ranger. Now, The Lone Ranger is a remake of the old Lone Ranger serial and comics. This one's directed by Gore Verbinski of Pirates of the Caribbean, stars Johnny Depp of Pirates of the Caribbean and everything else everyone knows Johnny Depp from. He plays, he plays the Native American Arnie Hammer from Social Network and Mirror Mirror earlier this year plays the Lone Ranger. Pretty much the best way to describe it is it looks like a Pirates film, but as a Western.
Yeah. It does. It looks really freaking cool.
It is. It looks good. I will say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much nail on the head right there. Pirates film as a Western.
Yeah. So,
Helena Bonham Carter, as always. Wherever Johnny Depp is, she's not far behind. So.
Yeah. It looks cool. Go check that one out. Some big films coming out next year. Next up is Oblivion, Tom Cruise's new big sci-fi epic, directed by Joseph Kosinski, who made Tron Evolution, such an awesome film.
Tron Legacy.
Tron Evolution. Yeah, that was...
We don't even have Evolution, there's Uprising, which is...
The television show. It's very similar to After Earth, in that Earth is no longer what it was. Apparently aliens invaded, the humans fought them off and then escaped from Earth, and now there's drones on the planet. And then, whoa, actually, not quite. There's humans there, Morgan Freeman hanging out with these tiny little sunglasses, and then there's a conspiracy and action film.
Yeah, it's like a colony of humans still left, but then the drones turn and start attacking humans.
Well, I guess the idea is that the drones never turned. The drones were just always there getting rid of them. Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? There's aliens. There's
Robot
action.
Rebellion.
Yeah. So, Tom Cruise doing some future shit. And we got our Well, our first good look at the new upcoming Man of Steel, Zack Snyder's new Superman film.
This is very on par for my trailer of the week, I think.
It's
a toss-up between this and our next one, but...
Like, it's good because you finally get an idea of more about this film. I mean, I completely forgot Russell Crowe was in it as Jor-El.
Yep.
And that... Yeah, it looks really cool. Like, there's a lot more action in there. It looks like there's a ton of action in there, actually. Visually, it looks really good. I mean, Zack Snyder's always been a very visual director, if he hasn't been very much a director of substance. Even though a lot of his films, like 300 is the one he's known for, is a visual style he took from the comics to replicate.
Yeah.
He did a good job at replicating it, but he never originated it. And as much as Sucker Punch looked great in parts, I don't think that whole film was any good at all.
That wasn't glued together very well.
No, it was bits and pieces, but then the everything in between.
The trailer was the best part about that movie.
Yeah, the fact is Zack Snyder can do very visual things, and Chris Nolan producing it means it could come out to something good, but the trailer looks awesome.
Our first glimpse of Michael Shannon as General Zod. So.
Yeah, also I had no idea that Amy Adams was...
Lois Lane.
Sorry.
Dying.
Sorry. Sneeze. So yeah, I don't know. Amy Adams was Lois Lane. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And he looks like a pretty good fit for Superman. I didn't think at first because Henry Cavill doesn't look very Superman-y.
Does now.
Yes. And our last trailer, which of course is the first teaser trailer of Star Trek Into Darkness after the poster coming out last week. Which we get our first good look at Benedict Cumberbatch as... they put out his name. I can't remember what his name is.
Yes, but it's not...
It's not Khan or the other one that is as people as rumors were going around.
Yeah, but it's an... Everyone's assuming it might be an alias.
Yeah.
And because it's in the alternate timeline now, yeah. It might be someone either related to a previous villain or he is actually... that villain, he just hasn't become them fully yet.
Yeah, they did. The trailer does allude to a bit that he looks like he is part of Starfleet. I mean, they put out a screenshot the day after of all three of them, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, and Benedict Cumberbatch, which Benedict Cumberbatch locked up, but they're all wearing Starfleet outfits.
Yeah.
I don't know what the designations are. I'm pretty sure, as far as I know, is yellow is science, red is security. No, yellow's not science because yellow's command.
Red coats are the ones that always get killed.
Yeah, they're security. Blue is science, sorry. And he's wearing a black one, so fuck knows. I don't know what that is.
I'm just glad to see in the trailer that all the actors from the first have returned, not just the mains. Like, they've got Russian...
Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, they've got Sulu.
I was about to say George Takei back, yeah. Harold from Harold and Kumar. I can never remember his name.
Yeah. But I mean, all the actors
they've got,
like, from the original, not just, you know, a handful. Which, replaced a few. Like, everyone is back.
It'll be good, especially for Simon Pegg's Scotty.
Simon Pegg as Scotty.
He was introduced so late into that first film. Because he was the last one introduced. They were pretty much all there and in place during the thing. Like, a lot of them were there from the beginning, but Scotty was the only one that they took their time to introduce. Just for me, anyways, as long as Carl Urban is back as Bones,
yeah,
he was one of the best things about that first one. Was we both rewatched it recently. I watched it after this trailer came out.
If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. I was never a Star Trek fan until this movie, and I freaking love it.
And if you have seen it, go watch it again, because I forgot how good that film is. Plus, Thor is in it for 5 minutes, and he is one of the best 5 minutes of that entire film.
Chris Hemsworth,
that moment when... I forget his name. Who's the commander that gets him to join Starfleet?
Pike.
The moment when Pike tells him, just as he walks out, that your father was a Starship captain for three minutes.
And he saved over 800 lives.
Yeah, there's that one moment gives me tingles every time.
Yeah.
So, Star Trek, the new trailer, I'll try post it. I don't know if they're up on YouTube yet. But if I do post it, I will post the Japanese trailer, because the Japanese trailer is slightly longer. It's about 20 seconds longer, and it has a little bit at the end with Zachary Quinto giving a few lines, which looks interesting. A lot of people have led to the fact that it mirrors the scene from Wrath of Khan, where Spock sacrifices himself.
So. Yeah, it won't happen.
Well, you don't know. They changed the timeline mainly due to the fact that it allows them to
Yeah, but they won't kill Spock.
You don't know?
They're not allowed to kill Spock.
So he dies in the second movie.
Zachary Quinto is fucking amazing. So no.
Okay, so those are the trailers of the week, guys. We'll post them, you check them out, tell us your thoughts and all that stuff. So let's talk about Man with the Iron Fists. It is the RZA's first film. Now, if you don't know the RZA, he was originally one of the Wu-Tang Clan, I believe. He did the music. He did music for Kill Bill. He did music for Afro Samurai. He's done music for movies here and there. And he was pretty much influenced during the... He flew out to watch the filming of Kill Bill to watch Quentin Tarantino at work. And he's been working on Man with the Iron Fist since about 2002, so about 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. No, because Kill Bill was 02.
Oh.
So he had the idea way back when. Eli Roth is co-writer. What happened is they pretty much... He told Eli Roth about the idea. Eli Roth was like, that's a fucking awesome idea. Then it got to a point where he wrote out a... kind of spec idea of what he wanted to do. Then Eli Roth was like, dude, you gotta get a script down pat so we can sell it to someone. Bunch of screenwriters came in and started rewriting it. Eli Roth went, nah, this is not what the original idea was. They worked on it, they both wrote it, and then the RZA directed it. Now, it's the best way to do it is, you said, western kung fu film, a kung fu western.
Yeah, pretty
which
much.
Which is a blending of genre. Which,
yeah.
There are other style of films like that. Kill Bill is very much a blending of genres. Bunraku is a really good west, kung fu western.
Kind of reminded me of the last, say, half hour of Kill Bill. And
yeah.
Yeah, reminded me of Bunraku.
And Sukiyaki Western Django is a very, very good kung fu western. That is one of the weirdest films you'll ever see. I think the way... The things that the RZA has done is he's... created a kind of fantasy version of ancient China with the kung fu and all kind of different little gadgets and stuff, and there's guns when there may not have been guns. A man named the Brass Body, he turns his body into pure metal. My not really grievances, but my annoyances with the film were two things. Is one, he just didn't do enough. I mean, the guy turns to fucking metal,
yeah.
And that is as crazy... Well, okay.
But it's Batista from
wrestling,
so...
Each of the characters have really interesting, like the Gemini twins and their continuous joint fighting style.
Yeah.
There is a 5-second shot of a bird woman flying down to the
ground. Yeah, we still haven't worked out why.
But it's like he didn't go crazy enough. I kind of wanted him to go a lot more crazy,
yeah.
More over the top. And the other thing is, the film has occasional Chinese by some of the Chinese. I think it's Chinese by some of the Chinese. Lucy
yeah.
Liu does a bit. Some of the other actors do a bit. But it's primarily in English, which is an obvious option because it's an English film. But it would have been so much more interesting had the entire film been in Chinese.
Yeah.
Like, if he had just leaned into that. Because the opening titles are really well done as an old kung fu film, kind of freeze frame. The really badly titles, and it's got the English name and the Chinese name,
yeah.
And everything, and it's really cool. It just doesn't go far enough for me.
The universe he created in that film could have been done, like could have more done to it. Like he could
yeah.
have focused on one part and left out so much more, and been able to do sequels or been able to expand the universe properly. Like he's got the groundwork for so many different things in there. And instead of spreading it out, he's just touched on every little bit and killed everyone in every little bit,
yeah.
So that he can't go back to it.
It's like he's worked out everything to do with this world, but introduced bits and pieces and then not really gone any with it. Like I said, the woman that flies down like a bird. There's credits at the end for the Rat Clan, and I don't even know if they're introduced in the movie.
I'm pretty sure they were.
Or they might have been the dudes at the beginning.
Yeah.
Where they just... The other thing is the...
No, it was, because the Rat Clan was the guys
yeah.
that were sitting in that tea house, and he was eating... The rat was eating stuff off the table, and
pushed it down into
his chest, and they all... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's created a world, and he hasn't really... Either it's all just been cut, shot and cut, or he's just leaned into some of it more than the other thing. The other... He's also created the town. It's the Jungle Village.
Yeah.
Which it took me the entire film to wonder if... Because RZA narrates it, so is he saying Jungle Village or the Jungle Village?
Yeah,
luckily, a sign pops up at the end. But it's the beyond the town. They only spend most of the time in two locations. The town is pretty much incidental, so it doesn't even matter what the name of the town is, or where it is, or what it has to do with anything else. It's kind of very incidental to the plot of the film.
I guess my favorite thing in the whole film was Russell Crowe.
Yeah, Russell Crowe is pretty good.
I think he held it together a lot.
Is it just me, or was he really fat in it?
Oh, a little bit compared to what he is now in these films coming out in the next few months. It looks like
Even in what was the fuck? Robin Hood. Even in Robin Hood, he was big, but he wasn't fat.
Yeah,
like he's gotten big lately. Like, but he was like still muscles in this. He kind of seemed chubby around the cheeks and had a huge belly. And I was like,
but I don't know whether it was just for the character because he's, you know, British military in a foreign country, kind of.
The other thing is the gore is kind of all over the place. Like in one scene, Russell Crowe cuts a dude up from the stomach and it like shows his stomach as it opens up. First fight scene, they're ripping dude's arms off. The RZA punches a guy's eye out of his face, which I couldn't stop laughing at.
But I mean, like, some of it's so dumb. Necessary, like we're saying, that slow motion part.
No, it's like
was brilliant, and then some of it is just like that was pointless. Why did you even do that?
One of the cool things that I think Quentin Tarantino managed to hit in Kill Bill anyways was the fake over the top violence. Like when Lucy Liu cuts that dude's head off and blood just sprays and it's so obviously spraying blood. Like the big bit when
but the thing is when throughout Kill Bill when people were killed in similar manners to that it did that consistently throughout the film, not just once or twice,
and it didn't seem like when he kicked the guy through the throat with his foot knife and then and I'm like that's really funny, that's a nice attention to detail, but then it didn't really do it for anything else.
No,
like some of the blood looked like it's comically over the top, some of the other blood looked kind of realistic, and it's like what the whole film kind of seemed like the RZA going between the beginning of the filming and the end of the filming is he kind of fully got to the swing of things. Like he wasn't, because bits in the film look a lot better and feel a lot better directed than early bits in the film. A lot of the non-fight scenes as well seem a little bit, the actors that are in it seem like they're doing as much as they can, but I don't know if the RZA was fully there while
it kind of feels like his
directing is, it looks like he got better over the time, but since films aren't filmed chronologically, you can see bits and pieces look better than other bits feel better. Especially in the editing suite, like during the end of the film, there's a whole bunch of like comic style three
like
panels.
Halfway through, we got visual consultants, like pretty much fired a team of visual consultants and hired a new one, and then but still edited it like, you know, 4-2-3-1 kind of thing.
It's
just it's chopped and changed throughout the film.
Some of the stuff looks visually great. There's bits during the whorehouse, which is most of the film is set, which is like colorful and vibrant. And then there's just other bits that are dull and gray. Like even when they go meet the emperor or the governor or whatever it is, it's not even a great set.
Lucy Liu needs to do more kung fu movies.
She needs to do more movies.
Awesome.
Since Elementary, she's come back on the radar, and like this, she's great in. She was always great in Kill Bill. She was not so great in that terrible. What was the Jackie Chan Western film? That Kung Fu Western? That's pretty funny, but it's not so great.
What,
Shanghai Nights and Shanghai Noon?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in that for 5 minutes and she's... Yeah. But,
yeah, overall,
the fight
it's a decent film.
Yeah. You know what? It's not terrible. There are some pretty bad bits in it. The fight scenes are great. A lot of them are really good.
I mean, you can't take the movie, like, too seriously.
Yeah,
but
it looks like he's kind of done both, because there's bits of over the top comedy and then there's bits of kind of seriousness.
Like you can tell he gets his inspiration from Tarantino, so it's faux Tarantino. Like it's, you know,
I think
along those lines, but not as well executed as he could have done.
It hasn't done very well performance wise. It's made about $17 million from a $20 million budget. The minimum for a $20 million budget, you want to make at least $40-50 million.
Yeah,
so it probably won't get a sequel, but. If the RZA goes on and if he practices more, he could make some pretty cool
things.
There
are some decent ideas in there, and he's done a decent job for a first-time director.
And at least all of the Asian actors he's hired, since he's decided to make the film in English...
All those Asian actors were perfect.
They were great, but they were all speaking perfectly good English.
Yeah.
Like I'd be surprised if any of them were actually born in China.
Yeah.
The other thing is the guy that plays the Silver Lion, he was probably one of the best things about that film.
Yeah.
He just plays that with a nonchalantness, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm evil. Fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was great. So you should definitely check it out. There's some good bits, there's some bad bits, but overall it's not too bad.
Yeah.
No. So now Troy is going to tell us a bit about the Wii U. Wait, before he tells us about this, I don't have a Wii U, but I own Zombie U. Just because I could get it cheap, so...
Yeah. It's a series of events.
Anecdotal. All
right.
What games do you have, by the way?
Where do we start? Nintendo Land, because I got the premium console, so...
Yeah.
Comes with Nintendo Land, New Super Mario Bros. U, and Call of Duty. Nothing else, pretty much, because I'm poor and it's Christmas, so I want people to give me the games instead.
hint, nudge.
Obviously, if you're a fan of Nintendo, you've probably already bought one. If you're not, I wouldn't get one yet. Mainly for the library, there's a lot of cool games to play on it. Like, there's two or three decent games to keep you entertained.
But the main problem is, of course, like 75 to 80% of the games are ports of games that have been out for a very long while.
Like, there's a couple of first party, like obviously Zombie U and New Super Mario Brothers U.
I'm kind
of
bummed about two things specifically. Scribblenauts is not a
first party.
Yeah, not first party. Not Nintendo only. I have it on PC because it was $50. I haven't played it. But, the fact if that was a Wii U exclusive, that would add to my okay. I want to play that. Also, Lego City Stories.
Yeah,
I thought was Wii U exclusive.
So did I.
It's not. It's multi-platform.
That's fucked.
So, as far as I know, last I checked, it was. So maybe it isn't. That is a perfect example of a game that should be exclusive. If Nintendo needs to, what Nintendo needs to do is lock up third party exclusives, because they're going to have Zelda and they're going to have Mario, their 3D Zelda, the 3D Mario, and they're just going to people. Once one of those games are out, it's like, okay, I've got to get this.
Yeah,
I mean, I got the Wii U for Twilight Princess. Never finished Twilight Princess. Never really started it. Played 20 minutes.
Brilliant fucking game.
But but they because like they said, they're going to work on third-party games, but they need to lock up those exclusives.
Yeah,
and it's not something they've done for the launch, which is unfortunate because they're counting on people buying the Wii U for the ports.
Yeah,
which is not what people buy Nintendo products for.
But I mean, January, February, we get a new wave of Wii U stuff, so that'd be probably a better time to buy.
Yeah,
but I mean, also, I guess they just kind of pumped it out with, I guess, 10 games, I think.
They wanted to get it out to jump on Black Friday in America, get the sales out
there.
Not
so much Black Friday, just pre-holiday.
Yeah, get the consoles into people's hands. Which, if you are thinking about waiting to buy, the other upside is, of course, that the Wii has had a bunch of day one patches. That, from what I hear, is the connection between the Wii and the internet isn't so great, that the transfer speed is pretty slow.
Runs good for me.
Yeah, but I've heard from a bunch of Americans who do have high-speed connection, that it runs a lot slower than the other consoles.
Yeah, see, that's funny. Americans are having trouble with their high-speed internet, and I've got a shitty Wi-Fi connection, and...
Well, how long did it take you to download the day one patch?
45 minutes?
Yeah. Like, but the upside, anyways, is the next...
But I mean, everything has a day one patch.
The next launch of consoles, like early next year, will have that patch built into the firmware anyway, so... You'll be able... Because it is a small amount of people that don't put their stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
Like... The unfortunate thing will be someone comes home with a Wii U, plugs it in, and then puts a game in and says, sorry, but you have to update. Which will be unfortunate over Christmas, but beginning of next year, they'll at least iron all that stuff out.
Yeah. And I mean, it's an improvement for the connections for the games, and it's also an improvement for piracy. Because an update for every game, kind of like when you turn an Xbox game and it's had your little quick update, it's doing that for some of these games, but their initial updates are for piracy reasons. So if anyone's worked out how to chip or copy, then it's kind of nerfs it, which is a good thing.
They should just make the old GameCube get things again.
No, well, these discs, I don't know whether you felt them, but they're weird.
Proprietary Blu-ray.
Yeah, they're like rounded edges, and
so
they're
Nintendo's
thicker
version of Blu-ray, so they have a bigger disc standard, but unfortunately it doesn't play Blu-rays.
Yeah. Oh, everyone has a Blu-ray player by now.
Yeah. But still, like, they didn't do DVDs or CDs for the last one.
They don't do
it's
extra
weird
peripheral shit because everyone else has already got it.
Yeah,
or
but
you'd assume that every household would have.
It's kind of half-half when you think about it. Like, they're getting ports in that's like, okay, we want if you have a primary console, we want it to be the Wii U. And then the other two consoles have spent so long. Like, they've got Wii U's, got Netflix and all that kind of stuff, standard for Americans mostly anyways. But the other consoles have spent so long saying, okay, we want you to buy this console for everything else, and then play games on its secondary.
Yeah.
So, I do hope that if Nintendo's, if they focus less on ports, focus less on third party all consoles, focus less on, obviously, they're focusing less on it being a media center. Focus
well, that's
more
what, I mean, PlayStation and Xbox over the last couple of years, that's pretty much been their E3 presentation.
Yeah,
well,
like
look,
the fucking
Hulu and Netflix.
I will admit,
and
as
got
dumb as the Xbox smart glass sounds, being able to be in another room and access my Xbox from my iPad, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, but...
It's stupid.
But the fact
is... It's really
is,
stupid, but it's kind of cool.
Underneath it all, it's a game console.
Yeah.
And...
I play my Xbox with games. I don't play movies or anything. Yeah, my PC plays Blu-rays.
Yeah.
So that's where on my Blu-ray player plays Blu-rays.
Yeah, that's it.
On my PlayStation plays Blu-rays.
PlayStation and Microsoft have been so focused on operating systems and the entertainment portion of it rather than the gaming portion of it. These machines aren't gaming machines anymore.
Because it sucks because it
takes a backseat.
The 7th generation, which is the generation consoles we're up to, has just been so fucking long. 05 was it, the Xbox? So it's been 7 years since the...
Like only 6 months ago they stopped doing PS2 games.
Yeah.
Like,
it's,
are you kidding me?
The thing is...
What are the people on welfare going to get now?
Yeah. Plus, developers don't want to make new Xbox games or PS3 games because by the time that their game starts now and they finish it, there's going to be the next line of consoles.
So waiting for development kits. So we're at the dead end, pretty much.
Yeah, if the next two don't come out for a while, this is the perfect time for the Wii U to actually jump on that because you have a new console, you have games that people are actually making a console for, and not the end of a life cycle. So, sorry, keep going.
But I mean, I guess I'll quickly touch on the games. New Super Mario Bros. U, awesome game, similar to New Super Mario Bros. Wii, New Super Mario Bros. 2 on 3DS. It's another Mario game. I've played every single one to date, but this, personally, I think is the hardest one I've played. Like, difficulty-wise, you can get through and do everything you need to do, like normal Mario game, but I'm obsessive-compulsive about getting all Star Coins, getting everything in every level. And for me, it's been an absolute bitch. There's some really, really hard shit in there. There's a lot of cool, like, speedrun DLCs they're releasing for it, and, like, ultimate levels, like those bullshit levels you see the Japanese people play on videos on YouTube, so that should be some pretty interesting shit, but definitely worth playing. Cool multiplayer, cool single player. Call of Duty, Black Ops...
You know what you're getting into with
that
one.
You know what you're getting into with Black Ops. I guess the big difference is I played on Xbox and on Wii. It feels a bit smoother on Wii U. Like, looks a bit cleaner, I guess. I don't know. It just... It feels good. It doesn't feel clunky. It doesn't... There's a few little minor differences that I've noticed. I guess the big thing is the gamepad. Being able to customize weapons and move kind of... your things around on the gamepad screen. They've got all your perks, like all your kill streaks, things like that, available down the sides of the gamepad, so you don't even have to look down. You just kind of hit where you need to go, but it flows well. It's great. I don't know. Get it. It's good.
Nintendo Land.
I guess. Yeah, Nintendo Land. Cool park attractions. A lot of cool single player. If you've got friends who've got a Wii U, or even if you don't and you meet people within there, it's pretty easy to add people.
Are you talking about Miiverse or Nintendo Land?
Nintendo Land.
Oh, okay.
It's easy to add people than what you'd think, and you can go through, beat people's records, which I think is what keeps me going back and playing it, because there's a lot of really funky single-player games you can play, and then you get a notice in...
Funky Farm?
Funky Farm's not in Nintendo Land.
No.
But, I mean, you get a lot of cool shit in there, and then I'll be halfway through playing Black Ops and get this little notification in my corner saying someone just beat my score on Nintendo Land. I'm like, fuck you, now I have to drop out and go beat the score again.
So yeah, I've gotten over that stuff because they've been putting that in a lot of like Steam Star games, and like it'll pop up saying this dude has beaten your score. Ah, fuck, who cares?
Yeah,
I spent too long getting that first score, I can't be bothered.
I say who cares, and then I get a message from friends who've got a Wii U saying, haha, I beat your score. I'm like, fuck. But yeah, no, there's a lot of cool games coming out early next year, so I mean, if obviously everyone's made up their mind whether they are or aren't getting one, but if you're holding off and getting one, I'd say mid-February.
I will say this at least though, I was told by the people at EB that if I did not pre-order one by the 18th of March, that I would not get one until early next year, and it seems, I don't know if EB underestimated how many people...
No, EB are just dumbasses.
Well,
no offense to EB employees or people who listen to it, but 90% of the staff I've spoken to in EB stores read what they're spewed out by their head office.
I was going to say, you speak to the wrong staff. A lot of the staff members I speak to...
Yeah, no, there are some really knowledgeable staff at EB Games, and then there are ones that...
I know there are a few of them. I do remember overhearing a talk once in the background, a kid come up and asked something about something and then walked off and they didn't know. And it's like, fuck, what I know about video games? I'm like, what?
Yeah,
you
work
in the video game? I mean, it's understandable for someone that... Like, it's a job for some people. Other people, not so much. I work in the cinemas and I love movies.
Yeah.
I still get pissed off when people ask me dumb questions, though. And it's like, I don't fucking care.
And it kills you for people who want to work in places like that when it's their passion. And you've got this kid standing there who has no idea about video games or just doesn't give a fuck. And it just, you know, it kills it.
Yeah. But there are still some available, basically, was my point. Is they're out there if you need to get them. The standard and the deluxe. And so the Nintendo Wii U, whatever your thoughts are, it's here, it's here to stay.
Yes.
Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about The Walking Dead. Now, I've just finished off Season 3, so we're going to talk pretty much in depth about The Walking Dead. I figured we'll do it this way. We'll talk about Season 1, we'll talk about Season 2, then we'll talk about Season 3. So if you haven't watched any of those seasons, we are going to go into details, character deaths, major plot events, so... Warning, this will all be full of spoilers, so the rest of the show will be just Walking Dead. So if you're not going to listen because of Walking Dead, I thank you for listening up until this point. And we'll see you next Friday. For those of you who are coming for a ride, let's talk a little bit about The Walking Dead. So, Season 1, 6 episodes. First episode written and directed by Frank Darabont. Most of the episodes executive produced by Frank Darabont. He co-wrote 4 of the 6 episodes. The first episode, for me anyways, before I heard when they started making The Walking Dead, I heard way before, like, oh, they're going to adapt this comic into the thing. I was like, oh, fuck it. Yeah, I'll go pick up the comic.
Yeah.
I eventually got 2 volumes. I had a choice between getting the 3rd volume of that or getting the 3rd volume of Why the Last Man. I kind of wish I picked up the 3rd volume of Walking Dead. As great as Why the Last Man is, I really enjoy Walking Dead more. And fuck it, zombies, man.
Yeah.
And I love the comics. Comics are fucking awesome. The comics are more about the characters and the drama and everything surrounding them than it is about the comics. It's about the zombies, sorry. And it's a thing that carried over. When I watched that first episode, the pilot of The Walking Dead, it is singly probably one of the greatest pilots for a TV show ever. Probably one of the best first episodes of a TV show ever.
Extremely well done.
Even the quirky little changes, like him not finding out about zombies until way after.
Yeah.
Rather than
the little girl in the street and having a shooter in the head.
Was that the first episode?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. That's
just brilliant. Like start to finish, every single thing. The end of that episode was where they were running through the street and it zooms out and you see pretty much the entire city like covered in zombies.
I didn't know this, but the zombie inside the tank is Sam Witwer.
Ah.
So for those who don't know who Sam Witwer is, he is of course from Battlestar Galactica Season 1 and early Season 2. Also, he played Starkiller in the Star Wars games, Force Unleashed 1 and 2.
Sweet.
So, apparently there was plans for him to, like, obviously flashbacks of him and that character, but Frank Darabont left in Season 2, so we'll talk about it when we get to Season 2. Season 1 doesn't really follow too closely to the comics. It does a lot of things. It introduces Glenn.
Creates its own universe kind of thing.
Yeah.
Side stories.
It influences stuff from the comics, but does its own thing. The character of Glenn, who's in the comics, is really cool in the show. They introduced Andrea, Dale, a bunch of other characters, Shane, of course, John Barenthal, who plays Shane, Andrew Lincoln plays Rick Grimes, the main character. The two were partners before the end of the world. So, both really great actors. Main grievances, is the 3rd or the 4th episode when they go back for the gun bag.
Yes.
And then they meet the Latino gangsters and then the old people's home. That wasn't in the comics.
Not so much that wasn't in the comics. That wasn't... It was pointless.
It was.
In
it was
my
kind
opinion,
of,
they could have left
I think
that
the main,
thing out. I forgot about that until you told me. That's how stupid that scene was.
It seemed like what they're trying to convey is that there are other people doing it as hard as them. There's still people that are alive and doing their own thing, but...
I guess they were trying to show the gang mentality too, because it's, you know, pretty much martial law.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
But I find that it's more interesting not knowing if other people are alive out there, whether or not they're the only, like, 8 to 10 people left.
Yeah.
In thing. Of course, in episode 3 or 4, when they get back, there's a herd of zombies that attacks the camp, and one of the guys gets bit. Andrea's little sister Amy dies, and it keeps this kind of really annoying story thread throughout season 2, in which Andrea doesn't want to live; she wants to kill herself.
Season 2.
So, which is the introduction of that, which is really cool. But kind of gets annoying. The season finale for episode 1 is the most deviation from the comics as yet, really. What happens is they, in escaping from the herd of zombies, they go past the... No, sorry, they hear a radio command saying that the CDC, come to the CDC.
Yeah.
And they go to the CDC. And there they meet a doctor who... is a, kind of starts to reveal things about the plague, the zombie plague, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The things that have been most successful about the comics, anyways, and is that it doesn't lean into what happened.
No.
It doesn't fucking care.
No.
Zombies came. Who gives a shit? You can't. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You can't go back from where you are.
It doesn't give you a backstory about, you know, oh, this is what sparked it. This is what happened. This is what happened. No.
It's done, like, flashbacks.
There's zombies. Everyone's dying. You want to know what happened? Bad luck.
Yeah. It's done flashbacks before the event, which is always a really... like, that is a neat idea. It's like seeing a character who could be such a fucking psycho killer go back and do flashbacks. It's like, whoa!
Yeah.
He's not actually that kind of bad of a guy. A la Revolution. But...
yes.
But, of course, the CDC... doctor decides to kill himself and blow him up. There we lose our the next, I don't even know her name. There's a black chick that's traveling with them.
Black woman,
that decides to stay. Andrea, of course, sick of living in the world, decides to stay. Dale, the old guy, doesn't want her to die, so he stays behind to sacrifice himself, and they both get out of there, and yeah, everybody survives, and they ride off into the sunset. Also, it introduces one of the an underlying thread that doesn't come back up until season 3 is when Rick Grimes, the main character, first runs into the viewers. Of course, they meet Michael Rooker. Michael Rooker's fucking awesome, and everything he's in.
Yes.
He's also in Black Ops.
Yes, our friend Merle.
After an altercation, he gets left handcuffed to the roof, and they go back for him once the brother finds out. And of course, his hand is on the roof, and he's gone. And that's it. Yeah. And that's it. And that's all you hear. They, of course, leave Atlanta, and that's the end of season 1.
Yeah. Now, if he was in season 2, then it might have fixed season 2. Because I personally think season 2 is a clusterfuck and shouldn't have been made.
I'm assuming that you downloaded and watched each episode that came out.
Weekly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I watched it all pretty much at once.
It just made me want to stop watching. There was a point there, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 episodes into season 2, where I stopped completely. Until 2 episodes before season 2 finished, because I could not watch it. It was pissing me off more and more each week.
See, I wasn't that grieved by it. Like, I didn't mind it at all, because
it is a bit
slow. I will admit that, but the fact is it was for one, it was catching up on all the stuff it missed in the early parts of the comics that it didn't do in season 1. Do remember that season 1 was 6 episodes, so it had to be quick and thing. And then season 2 was 13. I think 6 episodes for that show allows it to be so quick and so fast at everything. Like, the pace of season 3, which we'll get up to in a minute, has sped up to an exorbitant amount. That I was like, well, fuck, they're going to burn through everything in this first half of the season. Like, they got 13 episodes, and they're just burning through shit each episode.
Season 3 is perfect.
So, of course, at the beginning of season 2, they end up in a...
farmland?
No, before that, they're on the highway.
The highway, yeah. Little girl runs away.
They lose her in the forest. They start looking for a...
They spend, 8 episodes looking for this fucking little girl?
Which culminates in a really cool moment, by the way. We'll get to that. But, so, they lose the little girl. The mother of the girl, whose husband died earlier in the first episode, the husband was a, incest rapist and a wife beater and all these other different things. So she pretty much... she just loses the plot. She doesn't want to leave without him. Early in the season, Carl, Rick Grimes' kid, gets shot, and they pretty much spend the rest of the season on this farm. and they introduced the Greens, Herschel Green and his family. It is a bit slow during the middle, but the main difference between season two and the show and the comics is early in the comics, Shane dies.
Yeah.
Shane has an affair with Rick's wife, and he wants to kill Rick, and the son shoots him in the face and kills him, and that's it.
Yeah,
they're never brought up again, and that's the comic thing. The main difference between that and the show is the show introduces Shane as more of a best friend of Rick's, so he's more of a tortured kind of, well, it's my best friend, but now I'm in love with his wife kind of thing. I've got to give my props out to John Bernthal, who played him. Who makes such an unlikable character, so unlikable, and kind of like, well, I kind of want him to redeem himself.
But
the character's like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
There's a moment in which there's a farmhouse full of zombies, and Shane is fed up with them being there. So he grabs everyone out on the farm and just starts screaming at everyone. And like that moment in the, it's probably one of the best moments of that season.
The only moment.
Like he smashes season. Open the farm and all these zombies walk out and they're just fucking downing them.
Yeah.
Everyone.
The context of ex-family members of the people that live on the farm, but they think it's just a disease and they can be healed.
Yeah. Herschel Green believes that he can bring these people back. And so he
knocks open the barn door and shoots them all in the face.
And then they kill all the zombies and then out walks Sophia.
Yeah,
this
little girl that went missing in episode one.
One reason they're all out there, kind of like stumbles along.
Eight episodes, fucking finding.
Ugh. Well, okay, so one of the behind the scenes, anyways. Who did it? I said his name earlier. The guy who's producing it, wrote and directed the first episode, Frank Darabont. Sorry, yeah. Who's known for a lot of Stephen King things like The Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption, The Mist.
Yeah,
which I love, Shawshank Redemption. He, due to a disagreement between him and the network fired him mid-season two. A lot of things happened during that season. I'm actually glad that they managed to hold on to Robert Kirkman, who is the author of the comics and still is writing the comics. They're up to issue 105 so far. So I think a lot of the issues with two is that in the background there was a lot of issues with the producers, what direction the show was going in.
My feel with season two was it's Days of Our Lives. They focused so much on the drama between characters. And I love this person and I don't want you to protect me and I'm sick of this and I'm sick of that. And them just having these shitty little infights.
I think it was just...
Yeah, like it adds to the characters. It adds to what you think about them.
13 episodes for that. If that second season was about 9 episodes... All of that stuff would have been a lot shorter and a lot more condensed. Exactly. The fact is they
spread it out, and it felt like they changed the demographic of the show. Like, it's like, okay, we're aiming the show at everyone in season one, everyone who likes zombies, and now it's like, okay, this show is made for 18 to 46 year old women.
But the thing is, I watched it, and I'm not an 18 to 46 year old woman.
I know you didn't,
and I liked it.
But it's
I'm agreeing with the fact that it was slow and it was a little bit too much.
Went 3 episodes in a row where I saw 2 zombies. The thing is, it's called The Walking Dead. It's a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, but the other idea is that
getting fucked up. And
Rick,
there's no zombies.
Rick is looking for a safe place for his pregnant wife and his son and all of his friends to live and stay, and it kind of gives that illusion of it is safe because there's one or there's two or there's everything. But
in season one, it was like every episode someone died.
Also, you only had half the amount of episodes.
Yeah, but it was showing that no one's safe. Like, no matter what the situation, no matter how safe you think you are, you can get fucked up. And then all of a sudden in season two, everyone's fine, everyone's happy living on a farm. And not until the point where Laurie, like, flips her car. I'm like, about fucking time they hurt someone or killed someone or something.
That's pretty much
happened.
The episode in which it starts to pick up. After Shane opens the barn is where the series decides, okay, we have an endgame, and starts leaning towards it.
Five episodes of them sitting around their bus and their little fucking campfire. Like, it's not, you know, camping. It's not camping with zombies.
Well, this is kind of what they want. They want to find somewhere where there are no zombies and camp there for the rest of eternity.
Yeah, but... I don't want to.
But anyways, so
Little House on the Prairie with zombies.
Come on, man!
Stupid.
I'm pretty sure Tobey Maguire's in that film.
God,
wait, that's Side of House Rules. Sorry, that's Side of House Rules. My bad.
As long as he doesn't cry, I'm fine.
So, of course, they open the barn. They find Sophia, and this is pretty much where the show kind of moves towards its end goal. Herschel pretty much everything that he'd believed was wrong, that the people are dead. Like that moment when Shane is just, they're holding zombies trying to put him in the farm, and Shane's just shooting this person like continually in the chest. Really awesome moment. But Herschel's out at the bar. They go to the bar, and that's when they run into other survivors. They get to a gunfight. Rick pretty much just fucking downs everyone in like 2 seconds, which is awesome.
It kind of really grounds the concept of every man for himself in that world. Like if you meet another survivor, it's whoever shoots and kills the other one first.
You can't trust them immediately.
They could have guns, they could have food, they could have everything that you need. So if they're not part of your group, kill them and take their shit.
Yeah.
And that's the mentality that it kind of sets for the rest of the series.
It does. This bit, between this bit and the end, they end up taking a prisoner, and that bit there is especially drawn out. But it does culminate in the fight between Rick and Shane.
Yeah.
Which Rick thinks he's solved the problem. He hasn't. Regardless, Shane wants Rick dead. He wants his wife.
Yeah. Well, it was a catalyst for the season final, pretty much.
Yeah, in the second last episode, it becomes that moment where, under the moonlight, Shane has Rick by gunpoint, and he's about to shoot him. He's gonna fucking kill him. This is gonna end here, and Rick, of course, stabs him, kills him, and it was like, and that Andrew Lincoln has done such a great job during the really dramatic moments when it has to be. He's done such a great job. When he kills Shane, you can see it in his face. Yeah. He's like, I needed to kill him, but he's my friend. He's my best friend. And then, of course, Shane comes back from the dead immediately. Carl shoots him in the face, kills him as a zombie, and then, oh, wait, there's like 150 plus zombies that just rock up and attack
him. And that was kind of the point in the series where they revealed that you did not have to be bitten to be able to turn into a zombie.
Is that everyone's immediately infected.
Yeah, everyone's infected.
Which
you
is
just have to die to become one.
Before they escaped the CDC in the first episode, the doctor whispers something to Rick, and which is that everyone's infected.
Yeah.
And when once he sees that Shane comes back from the dead, that's when his fears are confirmed.
Yeah.
That no matter what happens, is as long as you die, you're going to come back from the dead.
Yeah.
The season finale is about them trying to escape the farmers that's under attack. It's pretty cool. They make up from the 3 or 4 zombies they show during the entire season by throwing 100 plus at you. Some of the deaths, like they have to kill off characters, of course. They're going to kill off characters.
Yeah.
And some of the deaths seem really stupid, amongst other things. Is especially one of the guys drives the van up to the barn for Rick and Carl to escape, and then attempts to go through the front door, which is leading to like 50 zombies, and gets eaten. And it's like, okay, that was just fucking stupid. Plus, that kid was in like 2 episodes, and they're like, whatever. The rest of the family escapes through the side door. Herschel's just there with his infinite ammo shotgun. It's like, Herschel, we have to go. Herschel, we have to go.
He just keeps doing it.
He doesn't reload once, he just keeps going. Yeah. He's like, I've had enough of this shit. Rick and Carl finally come around and get him, and they get out of there.
Everyone escapes, but then Andrea was...
And Carla, what was her name? I forgot, Carol. Andrea and Carol.
Yeah.
Carol kind of gets separated and chased by zombies. Andrea goes after
to
save her.
But Carol back up.
Yeah, no, because Daryl goes back and finds Carol, gets her on the motorcycle. Andrea gets separated. Rick drives off, doesn't see her.
Yeah.
T-Dog sees her get taken. Like, she shoots a zombie, falls on her. T-Dog sees her go down.
They assume she's dead.
And assume she's dead. And then they ride off. They all end up meeting back up on the highway. And that's when Rick tells them that, first he tells them that they're all infected. And then they're all pretty angry with him for not telling him. And then at the moment when he decides, he tells Laurie that he killed Shane because Shane was trying to kill him. And then that's the point when he's the second last, especially in this series anyways, that his character changes majorly.
Yeah.
He turns to them all and says, fuck you guys, I killed Shane, I killed my best friend for you guys.
Yeah.
You can either follow me or go out there and die. Also, by the way, I'm in charge and you do everything I say.
You do what the fuck I tell you, or I shoot you in the face.
Yeah, and then that's the last you see of them. It cuts back to Andrea, who's stumbling through the forest, trying to get kill as many zombies as she can. Last zombie's almost down on her, head splits in half, and there's fucking Michonne.
Yeah.
A dark figure with a katana and two armless, teethless zombies being carried behind.
And Michonne is like one of the fan favorites.
Isn't her name Michonne?
That's how it's spelled. Pronounce McConaughey.
Even though she says Michonne all the time.
Yeah.
Isn't she French? Are you just saying that because that's how you read it?
No.
Okay. I'm just double checking.
Wiki it.
Because I just double checked with my, because I was going to read through again through the comics for this, and I was like, nah, I didn't have time.
So I'm almost positive. Wiki.
We'll look it up quickly.
Because there was something that I read, because you know how they have the how you're supposed to say shit on Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you might have read that wrong.
I might have.
But
I do have downs.
I checked where I was up to in the comics, and which is practically the end of season two, is because the last shot in the volume two of the comics is a shot of the prison.
Yes.
But anyways, the show ends, and season three started... It just says, it doesn't say.
You bastards, how dare you?
Me, Sean.
There it is.
Oh, wow, that's actually a really cool introduction. That's...
Yeah.
As cool as that is, that's slightly less cool than the show.
Yeah.
Because she's got the hood and everything.
Season three, so...
Okay, so far, season three has been cut to two seasons, and it's also...
Oh, they do that with every... Like, show all except
yeah.
season one.
Because the show's going to rate less over the school holidays.
Mid-season finale.
But, which means the main thing is the season will be a full 22-episode season.
Yes, biggest yet.
But they haven't made the same mistake of season two.
What do we have? 6, 13, and now 22. Next one will probably be, 45, 46 episodes.
Yeah, just exponentially each season is doubled last. It tells the two stories. Like, one okay, so the first 5 seconds of the show, by the way, are two zombies in a house. Rick comes in, shoots one in the face. Carl comes in, shoots the other one. T-Dog's stabbing one in the face. And Daryl's just firing arrows at everybody.
And then there's KFC ad.
And you get the first glimpse of Rick's new... It's been 8 months, by the way, sorry. It's been 8 months. And you get the first glimpse of Rick's new character arc in the fact that Carl...
Which I actually find confusing, because in the last shot of season two, they show where Rick and everyone's camped out, and they show the prison behind them, and it literally looks like 200 meters away, yet it's taken them
eight months
to walk 200 meters. Like, seriously, the fence is, like,
yeah, they didn't,
right
they,
there.
They
like,
didn't think,
right there.
They didn't think that one out very well. Carl grabs, of course, a can of beans or whatever, and goes to eat them, and then Rick picks it up and just throws it out the fucking window, because he didn't let him eat beans, I guess. It doesn't really come back to that, because he kind of lets Carl do whatever he wants, except, I guess he was only... I don't know. It's just really
fucking weird.
And if they see zombies and they move along.
No, it wasn't beans. I think it was dog food. That's why he pegged it out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it comes to the point where they find the prison. And this is the moment where he's like, fuck, I'm going to go in there. That prison is going to be ours.
Yeah.
And probably this entire first episode is about them and them using the prison. And it's fucking awesome. They've obviously spent 8 months coming up with a foolproof plan in how to take out zombies. Pretty much they stand back to back in a sort of hexagon
formation.
Yeah,
they've got strategy now, which is
really
good.
And it's their main players. It's Rick, Daryl, Norman Reedus plays Daryl, Glenn, Margaret... I can't remember her name, the girl's name, Herschel's daughter.
Oh, the one that's with Glenn?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And T-Dog. And they stand back to back and pretty much... Yeah, I know. I think it's Theodore or something.
Yeah, it's T-Dog.
They stab someone and then jump back. And then they stab a zombie and jump back.
Yeah.
Run into zombies with the right gear. The chick just like grabs
it
and stabs
them. Yeah, they've been using a lot
more
melee, save ammo, stuff like
that.
Yeah,
which is really cool. It shows that between the 8 months where they...
I like their strategy for that first part when they first get into the prison. Because they cut their way through the fence.
And
they
then they stab
the
them through the fence.
Up. Yeah, but then they clear like that entire area. Like they go like zombie to zombie, meleeing everyone, making sure every zombie's dead. All the stuff's like locked up and they're secure. They're not just like kill a few and run, wait for them to catch up. It's like they're doing it, you know, a sweep properly.
Yeah.
So
They pretty much clear out enough to move in.
Yeah.
And they do. And that's the first time you actually see that the relationship between Rick and Laurie is broken down.
Yeah.
Obviously, all the shit between Shane and whatever's happened over the 8 months, Rick is just like, I'm having none of it. So they go to clear a way through the prison to find the cafeteria to get food. In the process, they get separated and Herschel gets bitten on the leg. And in true... shit...
Robert Kirkman?
No, not Robert Kirkman. Who's the King of Zombies?
Huh?
Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead.
John Leguizamo?
the King of Zombies, what is his name? He wrote and directed all those films. Anyways, in Day of the Dead, there's a scene.
George A. Romero.
Thank you. King of Zombies.
I thought you meant an actual character. No. I'm like, is there a King of Zombies character? I've never heard of this. Yeah, if you said the director, I would have
Sorry. Yeah. George A. Romero, which in Day of the Dead shows that if you cut off a limb before the infection spreads, then you're fine.
More likely to save their life.
So, of course, first thing they do, grab Herschel and just cut his fucking leg off.
Yeah, like real damn quick. It's yeah. Like bitten, chop.
And yeah, well, that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry, if you get bit in the hand, I'm going to cut your arm off here.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because it's probably going to take me forever to get through your arm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, and then the episode ends in which they notice that 5 prisoners are still alive in the prison. Is episode 2 the one where they spend most of the time with Andrea and Michonne, or is that episode 3?
I'm pretty sure, or maybe 2 or 3.
Anyway, because they alternate at first.
Because they don't show the prison in that episode. It's an entire...
They don't show Andrea and Michonne in the other episode.
Yeah.
So, I think episode 2 is the prison episode. And which these prisoners pretty much follow them back. And which Rick gives them, Rick has turned from this person that's like, you know, we'll give everyone the benefit of the doubt, to the fact is, if you're not part of my people, you're an enemy.
Yeah.
And he tells them, okay, we're going to kick you out of the prison and you can fuck off. The prison is ours. The prison is ours. Fuck off, basically, is his thing. And one of the prisoners, Mr. Latino Heat or whatever his name is, who's obviously a psycho killer or of some sort, is... stop doing that. Some sort of psycho killer. He's having none of that. He's like, no, it's our prison. You guys can do whatever. You guys can leave our prison alone. And
Rick shoots one at that point. I think not yet. That's later.
Pretty much, Rick then goes, you guys are in the cafeteria for a while. We'll give you we'll take half of your food, and we'll help you clear out a spot of the prison. And of course, they take him back to the cafeteria, and the guy's like, well, you can have some beans and some rice. He goes, no. Half the food for part of the prison. That's our deal. So, of course, tells them, all right, this is what we do. Stay in a tight formation. Don't leave formation. And we're going to move through this prison. So, first bunch of zombies they run into, the prisoners just break off and start just running up to the zombies. Not even going for the head like they were told.
Yeah, some of them are like hand-to-hand punching people in the face.
The dude with the creepy dude with the mustache shiving the dude in the stomach.
Yeah.
It's like, that's going to do... The stomach's falling out. The tall, tiny, the big black guy gets the shit scared out of him, starts backing off, and a zombie scratches him with his broken wrist.
Yeah.
Which at the point, they tell him, there's nothing they can do for him. He's now been infected.
Yeah.
Latino Heat goes, okay, and then just bashes his skull in, and then just keeps bashing him and covered in blood. At this point, there's 4 prisoners left. They reach the first door, and Rick gives them all right, open the door, and you open one door, and we'll cut everything that comes through. And so he opens 2 doors, takes a swing at Rick, and throws a zombie at him. And they take out all the zombies. It's like, oh, yeah, I get it. Shit happens. And so Rick just machetes him in the face.
Yeah.
And then chases after the other black guy, locks him outside of the prison, leaves him to die. And then pretty much wants to kick the other 2 prisoners out. No, sorry, gives the other 2 prisoners their part of the prison.
Yeah.
And leaves them
Which
alone.
I forgot about the black guy kicked out until the episode where he turned the alarms on and all
comes back.
Thousands of zombies are running towards him. It's like, oh, shit,
he's screaming and you're assuming he's being eaten.
Yeah.
We're going to blitz through the rest of the season because we're running a bit over than what we intended. And then the 3rd episode, which is the Michonne and Andrea episode, which introduced the main, like the big bad, the villain for the season, who's going to carry through. Of course, it is the first revealed that Michael Rooker is not dead.
Yes,
but he's alive. No, yeah. He's also replaced his hand with a knife.
Yeah,
and it's pretty awesome. They introduced the governor and his town of, basically a town he's taken over.
Yeah, like a suburban area cordoned off with walls where they have patrols.
And it looks like a nice little happy town.
Yeah,
everyone's
a little community for everyone.
And so you do the thing.
And they make him out to be a good guy for the first 3 or 4 episodes, and then you realize he's a cunt.
A nice little charmer. He charms all the women and looks after stuff. Then he has a creepy side in which he has a separate room attached to his office filled with zombie heads. He also has his
fish tanks.
Yeah, his daughter's still chained up because he can't get over the fact that she's dead. He wants to find a way to cure her.
Yeah, people... this fucking whole, yeah, we'll cure them and they'll be fine and yeah. they don't lose their memories, yeah. Sure thing, high five.
But the first time you see that he's actually not the good guy you think he is, they find a bunch of soldiers.
Yes,
and then they,
SAS or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then they, National Guard.
Yeah.
And they ambush exactly. and kill them all and steal all their shit.
Oh, yeah, well, they walk up with their hands up like, oh, you know, we're just looking yeah. for safe haven and stuff. And yeah, the SAS are like, oh, cool, come over here. Bang, shoot in the face.
Yeah. And then Michonne decides to leave. She doesn't think it's all what it is. And I don't know why we're explaining the series. If you're listening this far, you've seen it.
Yeah.
So I've gone... So we'll just talk about our thoughts. You go first.
We'll go, I guess, what, season final?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay.
Obviously,
as I said, love season one. Season two for me was a bit of a fucking letdown.
It's not the strongest,
but it's the
weakest.
There were key moments that I liked out of season two, but overall I think it's a mess and I could have skipped it. Season 3 is right on track with what I think season 2 should have done, which is like the fast paced fuck tons of zombies, everyone's got an attitude, no more of this let's be friends with everyone shit. It's
and
like,
they also
okay, every man for himself or every group for himself, fuck you.
Yeah, and they also start they start killing off characters again. The T-Dog dies
yeah.
saving Carol, Laurie of course dies giving birth.
Fuck, I hated her character. Whiny.
She actually wanted to die really early on. The actress says talked to Frank Darabont, wanted
yeah.
to die really early on. They ended up keeping her, and then she died in this season.
Yeah, she's a whiny whore.
Which she actually did. In the end, she reconciled with Carl, and then she sacrificed herself for the baby. So she kind of made up for all the bad stuff she'd done. Which I believe that the moment where Rick, because the prisoner they leave alive ends up sabotaging the prison.
That episode with Rick after Laurie
yes.
died and him losing his
that
shit
moment,
was,
Andrew Lincoln is a fucking awesome actor.
Best moment in the entire series thus
yeah.
far.
Yeah, just as soon as when he realizes she comes out with the baby and there's Carl and then she's crying and he's like looking at her. And he's,
yeah,
and
he
just loses
life.
And he loses.
Yeah.
He's fucking screaming. He's like, no, he's.
Person locks himself into the prison
and just fucking starts decimating everything.
Ape shit crazy. It was
losing
fucking
his mind.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's the second main thing for that character. But I think those two events, one to turn him into a heartless killer and one to bring him back from the brink of the world, was Andrew Lincoln just has...
Yeah.
Like, he's got to be in more stuff. This dude has to be in more stuff.
I think
that one moment.
Like evolution of the characters in season 3. I mean, season 3, in my opinion, is the best so far.
It also... There's the moment later on when Glenn's... Yeah. Being interrogated by Mark Rooker throws in the
Glenn's become a hard
such
ass.
A fucking yeah I know
yeah, like,
that moment when he breaks out of a chair to kill a zombie.
Rick has become just the fucking man. Even Carl, like his son, is now like a fuck you kind
yeah.
of kid. Like he's such a smart kid and he's like
he's
fucking awesome.
We skipped right over the other awesome part of the show, and that's Daryl Dixon.
Yes
the
character that is
Norman Reedus.
Comics.
Yeah, he's the original character for the show. Probably one of the best characters in that show.
Yeah,
he's fucking awesome. Also, the fact I was...
and it scared the shit out of me. Like, major spoiler if you haven't watched the last episode, but at the very end of that fucking episode, scared the shit out of me
when
they put him in that pit
yeah.
with his brother, and it looked like they were going to shoot
well,
him. I'm like, you kill him, and you lose half your fucking audience. There
the
is
fact, the
such
fact,
a
I
huge fan base based around Daryl.
Yeah, the thing is, I someone posted on Facebook, it's like, I don't want Daryl to die. I'm like, fuck you, I haven't even watched season two yet. But the thing is, then they show you a preview of next season,
yeah,
and then you see Daryl back there at the prison. So
okay.
he's not going to, like, you see smoke in that spot and everyone running.
Oh,
so
yeah,
Michael Rooker
yeah.
and Daryl are going to get out of that, definitely. But that's where the season goes off. Michonne, of course, stabs the governor in the eye, fucking cuts his
yeah.
eye. This... What the second half of the season is going to be compared to what the first half of the season is going to be, it's going to be like a no holds barred kind of all or nothing. Someone's going to die. Main character's going to die. The main cast is pretty much down to the governor is main cast and Michael Rooker is back as main cast. All of the main survivors are. Carol isn't. Herschel Green isn't. Herschel Green's younger daughter isn't.
They're
for the end
of season 3.
No, they're still recurring.
Oh,
yeah, not main cast members.
Oh, yeah.
It is a fucking... You watch this season... I was watching... I was going to watch it all at once, try and marathon it, and then I was like, I don't want people to die. So I'm trying to watch one episode after another. The other big thing about the season finale is they introduce Tyrese, his daughter, and other characters...
Yes.
Who were actually in the comics, or introduced when they first get to the highway. And
as far as I can remember from the comics, Tyrese is Rick's bro, his best friend, because he's the only person, because there's no Shane, there's no Daryl.
Yeah.
So in the comics, Tyrese.
I just want to see the black dude and his daughter from the very first episode.
His son.
Son.
Yes. Yes.
Because
the actor that plays him, Rennie James, I think it is. He's such an awesome actor.
But yeah, they like get mentioned in that pilot episode. Well, I don't believe he ever comes back in the comics. Episodes for TV series, you know, like are different compared to the rest of the series. Like,
yeah, but that was a different thing from introducing a character than getting rid of them.
Yeah,
is but they made him such a awesome character that I really wanted to.
Yeah, I want to know more.
And like, there's no more of him radioing back to him anymore.
Yeah.
So, season 3 is definitely best yet.
Pinnacle of the series,
because season 1 for me, after that first episode, that was such a high bar they hit, they just could not hit it again with the other episodes.
Yeah.
Episode 2 was pretty good. The season finale was okay. The rest of the episodes were somewhere
in
between.
Season 3 is finally back.
Season 3, episode by episode, it just keeps getting better.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
getting on.
It's nothing
like, it's
is
on
like,
par with that pilot.
Nothing is as good as that first episode of season 3, but it just doesn't lose its momentum.
Yeah,
and what they have introduced in the second half of season 3, it's fucking awesome. I'm going to go back and reread the first two volumes of comics. I need to get more of the comics.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to download it. Like, I know I've been buying a ton of digital comics, and I could just buy a whole bunch of Walking Dead and read it on my iPad. I'd
rather have it
physical. Those, because since I own the first two, I really want physical copies of the rest.
Yeah.
And as it is, it's ongoing. 105 issues as of yesterday or the day before. So. All right. So that brings us to the end of the show. Walking Dead's fucking awesome is our summation of our thoughts.
Yes.
We ran a bit over than what we intended to, but our main show pretty much ended when we started talking about The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about The Walking Dead game, but unfortunately I haven't still finished episode 2. I'm going to get it all and replay through it all.
I can't play PC games, so I can't play
it. You can get
it
on PS3?
Huh?
You can get it on the PS3. Make an American account.
No, I don't want to make different fucking accounts.
It's not actually that hard. You literally say...
pain in the ass.
Okay, I
hate having different regioned accounts so I can play a game just because the fucking government have a tantrum.
Yeah, it's retarded. But also, it's also slightly cheaper to buy games from the States.
Yeah.
Also, apparently...
It's Christmas, I can't afford shit.
It's $25.
Yeah.
For all five.
Can't afford the bus home.
Right. But I finished the first episode, which was great, and I only hear greater things about every other episode. It's actually a full retail disc now, so go get it. There is another, of course, Activision, who make Call of Duty, first person shooter, Daryl Dixon and Merle Dixon, prequel to the show in production, which according to the website, you can either shoot all the zombies or sneak past them, which means it's a corridor shooter. Bullshit. For me anyways, there's only one zombie game that is worth playing, and that is DayZ.
I've never played it.
It's unlike anything else. There's a standalone version they're working on now that I would implore you to play if you had any sort of computer access. But like I said, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for those who have listened up to now. I'm out of words.
Yeah, we're going to be more prepared and more streamlined in the future.
Kind of like what we did there.
It's pretty much our hour and a half of information we can pump out quicker and not get so off topic.
Like, I think I fucked up there by pretty much detailing everything that happened in the show. And it's like, well, if you're listening, you've already seen it. What am I doing?
We get distracted pretty easy.
Yeah.
But,
there's shiny things in the corner.
We promise we'll streamline, so...
So,
yes.
So again, thank you for listening. You can find us, like always, at www.facebook.com.
Yes.
/popculture and whiskey. By now, actually, in order for us to fit this episode up onto Podomatic, our website, we have to pay for it now. So
can't we just remove all the...
I've already took off the Resident Evil episode.
Just have to take off that one.
We've got 5 up there.
Yeah.
The other thing is we can put it up on Mixcloud. They're free, but they don't have this cool website. What we'll do is we'll put it up on Mixcloud for now until we decide, because Troy has no money.
Yes.
Even though it's like $10, he only has to hand me $5 out of his pocket. He apparently doesn't have money for the bus.
No.
So you can find us on Facebook, and apparently soon you can find us on Mixcloud. Yes. I'm Reese.
And I'm Troy.
And we'll see you next week.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?